From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, August 16th, 2011. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
Last week's news of riots across England sparked many news outlets to do the logical thing, map them. And many did, using eyewitness accounts, authoritative sources, and social media. Those first two sources are familiar, but social media as a source for geodata is still somewhat experimental. This week we look at the challenge of using social media as geodata and what journalists, geospatial professionals, and the public can learn from mapping the London riots. But first, a word from our sponsor.
MapInfo Professional version 11.0 is now available. Visit www.pbinsight.com to download the 30-day trial, which includes enhancements such as a redesigned browser window for better data analysis, the ability to perform memory-intensive operations through enhanced support of 64-bit operating environments, as well as premium services for instant access to worldwide road-level tile data.
Now, I want to start our discussion with an article from James Cridland, who's from Media UK. He wrote this great article on August 9th titled, What I Learned Mapping the London Riots. None of this is going to be earth-shattering to people who do mapping, or frankly to journalists, but I thought it was really a nice recap of the challenges of trying to use social media to pull together a reliable map. And let me just highlight, he really made five observations. The first of which was that Twitter is not a reliable source. And I'm sure, again, that's not news to anybody, but it was really highlighted by the fact that Twitter posters were saying that things were happening in certain locations, and official sources were saying no, they weren't, and you had to sort of start with the idea that these were not reliable sources. Second, he noted that news media are not reliable either. News media make errors, trained journalists make errors all the time. Many people don't know what a reliable source is. So at times he reached out and asked people to provide him with reliable information, and people didn't really know what that meant. Fourth, he noted that automating this process of creating the map was really very difficult, in part because you couldn't take all of the data from a source like Twitter and just throw it on the map because of the inaccuracies. And finally, he commented, and this is rather touching to us in geospatial, a geographical verified map is surprisingly useful. And the use case that he noted was a visitor to London who really wanted to know where it was safe to go and where the riots really were. And then that's just one small example of the value of mapping their actual locations, but it's one that everybody can sort of connect to. So I wanted to use this whole challenge of trying to map the riots and use these variety of sources to look at this whole topic of using social media as geodata. And let me start with this question. If we're going to turn to the public to crowdsource geodata, which is what is being done in this case specifically for the news, but this could be for anything, for participating in your local government, noting where the graffiti or the dead animals are and so forth, how is it that individuals who are collecting this data are going to learn about how to collect valuable data? Do we teach it in schools? And how are we going to get better at it if, in fact, this is going to be one of the key sources of geodata as we move forward?
I think just using it, using social media and using more of it, is going to get people accustomed to using it for various applications, whether it's to interact with your local government, whether it's to report a crime, or whether it's simply just to communicate with friends. There's still a lot of people not using social media. We tend to think that for us people who live on the net, that everybody's using it. Well, everybody's not using it. We're not quite even accustomed to using and interacting with social media, let alone trying to interact with another person or another entity. So I think that's an issue right up front.
And I think that's actually a good point, because before you maybe even think about the location of your posts, be they on Facebook or Twitter or wherever, you have to learn to operate in this new social environment. And maybe only then you start thinking about, do I share my location? And how do I do it?
Right.
And then you get some feedback. One thing I was thinking about as you were talking was, if people do choose to share information that has a location tag on it, one of the ways that they could learn whether or not what they're doing is valuable is through feedback. So if, for example, you are the first person who tweets the picture of the fire at 64 Main Street, and that gets picked up and pushed around within your local town's social media, and then maybe ends up on the news, well, hey, you did something right.
Yeah, and there are several even local news TV outlets that are encouraging citizens to share their pictures. There's iReporter on CNN, and our local media has, I think, an iPix type of an email address that you can upload your photos of an event. So media is beginning to encourage citizenry to share information, text, photos, other multimedia, and that will encourage feedback, and that's how we'll learn how to utilize the language of social media.
Right, and hopefully also to use that location aspect of it.
Yeah, and to that degree, those people who have been using the personal navigation devices in which they can share road blockages or whatever, that really too in some regard is a form of social media, although the feedback mechanism isn't immediate, because and this actually relates to our discussion, is that information is curated and then verified. And how is that verified? Well, it's verified by how many times that location is identified as having a problem, a blockage, or whatever.
And I think in the same way that people are getting familiar with using those kind of tools, as we have more and more students going out using GPSs to create little tours or capture data around their school, in a sense, this is hopefully going to be part of your education as a citizen, as well as just a well-rounded individual.
And that goes back to your comment about how do we teach this. Well, it is being taught, but again, still in very elementary stages. Not everybody is doing it. It's not part of any curriculum. You would like to see this type of thing introduced into English classes, perhaps, and beginning journalism, even at the high school level. And it's not like kids aren't using social media now anyway, right? So maybe it has to be taught, or at least the principles thereof have to be taught. And maybe even more to your point, there really isn't any guide right now to how to use social media. It's all being formulated as we go in many regards.
And that actually brings me to my second question, which is, how do you determine what the best practice is for any given event? Because that best practice may change depending on where you are, where the event is, the nature of the event, and the nature of the people who are at the event. I started to think about this. So this fellow was trying to make a map and using all these resources and trying to figure out which ones were reliable or authoritative. And I'm not a journalist, so I actually had the opportunity to speak with a actual journalist over the weekend, and I said, so how do you figure this out? And the woman I spoke with made it very clear that from a reporting standpoint, the best possible data you can get is the data that you see yourself. So the eyewitness account, you are there at the fire. The next best is an authoritative source. That is somebody who has some specialized knowledge who can articulate to you what happened. So if it's a fire, you might want to talk to a fireman or a policeman, even the local alderman or somebody who knows the neighborhood, again, who has some special expertise that gives their description of it more value, more authority. And then the last best option is somebody with no specialized knowledge, somebody who you may not even know, who's, and I'll put this in quotes, just a witness. They just happen to be there. That brings up something that was actually in the article as an example, that somebody reported that there was looting at a Panasonic store.
Right.
And it isn't the Panasonic store. It just happens to be an electronics store with a different name, but there was a Panasonic sign in the window because they sell that brand.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of things that maybe just a bystander might say, oh, it's a Panasonic store, but somebody who was from that neighborhood or who even worked in that store would identify it by the name of the store.
Here's where we go back to a conversation we had with Jeff Jonas from IBM, who is addressing the area of big data and collecting all kinds of data, good, bad, reliable, not reliable, and weeding out the good data from the bad data, and trying to discern that based on the volume of interactions, the volume of data that you collect, and trying to weed out what is that bad, what is that anomaly, what was reported anomalously. Okay, it was an electronic store. What was the name of the store? Oh, well, maybe more than one person saw the looting and maybe could report more reliably what was there. Now, in instances such as this, there may not be a lot of people in that one place, so you're getting very unreliable information and hard to understand whether it's a truly reliable source. He may have been the only person there witnessing the event.
That whole vision of using lots and lots of data to sort of hone in on the truth is terrific. Journalism in particular can be challenged because, exactly as you said, there may not be that many witnesses, and the turnaround time needs to be quite fast.
Correct.
So
right.
Collecting all this data from all the various social media with all of its hopefully accurate location tags, building the algorithm to crunch it for this particular situation, and then to spit out the map. Could you do that this fellow was trying to make this map in an evening. Would you be able to do that? Maybe at some point you will, but right now I don't think we're there. So in a sense, what I think journalists are really doing is they're curating all this social media and trying to pull out the best authoritative data, hopefully confirm it, and then put it on the map.
Yeah, it's the only thing you can do in this instance. Just put what you've got on the map and see where it all falls.
Well, you could certainly just put everything you found on a map, and many of the disaster response maps we've seen are just that. Take everything off of Twitter that has a hashtag that came out of a certain geography and just pop it up on the map. And every citation is equal. And it says every dot is the same. And maybe that's not the best way. Maybe you could actually tag those based on some kind of confidence in their accuracy.
Yeah, that was just something I was just going to say is, can the individual person who is curating give a reliability level, green, yellow, red, green being very reliable, yellow not so, and red not at all, but we're going to put it here anyway, that type of thing.
Right, and why not? Mm-hmm. I mean, as journalists go out and do their work and create these relationships. So, for example, if you're sitting in the United States and you're trying to map the London riots, you might get in touch with a journalist in the UK who has people out in the field that they've been using as sources and has ranked those sources as more reliable, less reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this whole idea about actually confirming that people are who they say they are. So if it's the local authority police that are putting out this tweet, that may have a level of authority higher than just somebody on Twitter. Maybe as we move through social media, I think Twitter tried this with special kinds of accounts that confirmed that people really were who they said they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those have since been dropped. But I think that may come back around for a variety of reasons. So in a sense, we're really creating a new way of curating that, again, seems to always go back to these personal relationships.
Especially in reporting here. You want reliable sources. Sometimes the only reliable sources are the people that you know on the ground.
Right. And so in a sense, journalism hasn't changed at all. We're just using these new tools, but we have to figure out how do we create those relationships over time so that we trust this person on Twitter who we may or may not have actually ever met.
And it goes to the whole issue of stringers, right? Maybe you have your own Twitter stringers out there.
I bet that's already happening.
Yeah, you would think, yeah.
And again, if you may not have stringers in a certain geography, but other reporters may, and you can, again, if you have those relationships, then you can get down to those feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Who are authoritative. Again, so we're working sort of at that second best level, which is still pretty good. Now, the last thing I want to talk about was a document that Twitter put together, the Twitter Guide for Journalists. And it was really about how to use Twitter as a source for journalism. What did you think of that document?
I liked it. I thought it was a good start for giving people an idea. I think we are using a lot of those tools that are recommended. I was interested to see what real journalists, and they gave an example of Katie Couric and Ann Curry, how they were using it. And looking at how they were using it gave me a perspective of, okay, these are real journalists. how do they tweet? So I thought that was very good. And then I thought it was a very simple guide. And I like.
Now, how would we tweak it? It didn't specifically talk about Twitter and geospatial. But what would you add to the document to help folks who are trying to use Twitter-based data as geodata?
Yeah, I thought what was missing was, and they gave four different guides here, report, engage, publish, and extra. I thought what was missing was context. And this is where we as geo people come into play. Context for us is location, but also so is time and space, as in the difference between point A and point B and time A and time B. So I thought context was missing. You know, there's nothing for me to be able to relate what I'm tweeting to a location or a time. Okay, Twitter has you can turn on your location for Twitter, so why not have that? There seemed to be that was missing in the document.
Yeah, I found that too, and maybe some future appendix will have that. And just the idea for those new to Twitter that there are two ways to do location. One is to have your sort of permanent location. So all of my tweets come out of Somerville, even though I may or may not be in Somerville. Right. Whereas if you're on a mobile device with location capabilities, you can, in fact, tag your tweets with where you are. Mm-hmm. And knowing how to distinguish those two is quite important.
You would think that would have been mentioned because as you set up your account, you are asked for your location. So
right. I think that's a pretty important point that journalists need to understand as they try to use Twitter or any other of the social media that have those kinds of capabilities.
And it's a basic thing about reporting, right? We always have a date stamp, a location stamp for reports. So if you're going to set up Twitter for the newsroom, make it just like a newsroom. You know,
right. And maybe there needs to be some kind of code that said this is a permanent location. This person is always in this location versus this location differs based on where the person is.
Well, and this goes back to our discussion not long ago in our podcast about how useful is it to locate news on a map. That may be something that Twitter can help us figure out. Maybe there's something that needs to be said from a contextual point of view that more journalists need to engage in. And maybe they're just not thinking like we would think about it. So I'd love to hear that opinion.
That's actually a great idea. So if Katie Couric or Ann Curry or your favorite news personality who you're following on Twitter or Facebook or wherever said, hey, if you're out there and you're capturing news, make sure that you've got your location turned on it's going to be far more valuable. And to be honest, if I heard that coming from Scott Simon from NPR versus from Twitter, you know, I might listen differently. The other part of it I think that's missing too from this guide is that this whole sense of how do you curate and how do you confirm? And maybe that's basic journalism 101, which again I've never studied. But so how can you use Twitter to get somebody to confirm that they are authoritative in some way? Or how can you use direct messaging to talk to them sort of offline? Or find their email address so that you can actually have a conversation. Those are the kinds of things that Andy Carville from NPR does. He sort of curates a lot of social media, Twitter in particular, as the different news stories pop up. And a lot of what he has to do is track down people in country to confirm that they are who they are. and that they really were there when whatever it was happened. And I think we need more people doing that. In fact, maybe what's going to happen is we're going to have news bureaus where they have a bunch of people who are sort of the curation experts who are filtering social media information that's going to go into the stories, and they're going to be experts in tracking this stuff down. That'd be a pretty fun job.
Yeah, that would be a pretty fun job, although you might get labeled an armchair reporter, but it is a new form of reporting, for sure.
Curation is finding the best of and then passing that along to be a source for an actual journalist who may be out in the street, and then the stuff that comes in through social media is just another resource as you put together that whole story.
That story, yeah.
The whole armchair thing, I had to respond to that because I didn't think that was quite fair.
And yet we may be labeled as such. So we have to differentiate what that kind of a job is. I don't want to be labeled an armchair reporter because I live on the net every day.
Well, that's all the time we have. Before we go, our sponsor, Pitney Bowes Business Insights, would like to remind you that MapInfo Professional version 11.0 is now available. The product includes a redesigned browser window for better data analysis and the ability to perform memory-intensive operations. Visit www.pbiinsight.com to download the 30-day trial version today. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment at Directions Magazine, where this podcast is hosted. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.